series about questions that God or Jesus asked people in the Bible. And it got me thinking about questions because sometimes we can inadvertently think that our faith is like a dictatorship sometimes. Because let's be honest, sometimes we ask us to give up a lot of stuff and it's kind of like I have no choice in the matter. But when Una was doing a thing for parents, she pointed out that in the Garden of Eden, God asked Adam and Eve, like, where were you? What were you doing? Now, he knew. So God uses questions to draw us into a conversation because we have a friendship with him, not a dictatorship. So just listen to that. God wants a friendship with you. We use this term sometimes, relationship, but that can be a bit like, ooh, like it kind of has lost its meaning in our English language. But maybe a friendship might be a bit easier to understand. He doesn't want to just control your life. He isn't like this master plan guy who wants to just, you know, you have no free will, you have nothing. He asks questions in the Bible to draw you into a conversation. Because he wants to talk to you, he wants to have a friendship with you, and he wants this journey to be a relationship. So the question we're going to look at, which I really enjoyed because I'm a mom of three boys, right? And you'll understand when I tell you the question because I've said this so many times. And it's based on Mark, something that happens in the book of Mark, chapter 9, verse 33. Now, Mark is in the New Testament. It's after Jesus came. And they're retelling the stories of the Gospels of when Jesus was with us. And the question is, he turns to the disciples and he goes, what were you arguing about on that road? So if you're a mom, or if you grew up with siblings, if you're not a mom, but you grew up with brothers or sisters, how many times have you asked that? You ever drive, this is me, I'm driving the car, and I hear stuff in the back of the car, and I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? Nothing. Nothing's going on at all. And I'm like, I know you're arguing, what's going on? Someone's had a puck in the head, or someone's been kicking each other, or something's going on. And like, what's going on? And I know something's gone on, but they're like, no, nothing, we're fine. I'm like, why is your brother crying? No reason at all. So this is why I love the Gospels. Because if you ask God to help you, they're very human. They're stories of real people. The disciples who were traveling with Jesus, who gave up their lives to follow him. And this whole thing is that they were missing the point. And sometimes in the beginning of your walk with God, in the middle, or even if you've been walking with him for 30, 40, 50 years, you sometimes miss the point. So let's read the story in Mark 9 and we'll get to it and then we'll see if you understand what I'm talking about. So it's Mark 9, 33. So they came to Capernaum where when he was in a house, he asked them, he being Jesus, what were you arguing about on the road? But they kept very quiet because on the way they'd argued about who was the greatest among them. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be last and be servant of all. He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Now, I don't know about you, but we kind of live in a world where no one ever goes, do you know what I want to be? I want to be last. I don't want to be the top dog. Everything within us, everything in the world that we live in tells you, for you to be important, for you to be great, for you to succeed, for even in the church, for God to be pleased with you, you have to be the best of the best. You have to be the superstar. You have to be the person with the mic. You have to be up front. Everybody needs to see what you're doing. And this is exactly the world that the disciples were living in. So let's just look back. Who were the disciples? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's more, but we'll go with them. And they gave up their lives. They heard about this charismatic preacher. They came along to see him. They left. They were fishermen. They were other things. They left them all to follow him. So that would mean that maybe they actually believed him, yeah? Would you give up your life for someone? you were only half-hearted about, would you? So you're obviously convinced about the truth of what he was saying. And they all lived together, so they travelled and they lived together, and they spent a lot of time together. So this is a little bit down the road. But they're still asking questions that show that, or have an argument to show that they didn't get it. So everything that Jesus said and kept on saying was that, to follow me, you must give up your life. So they did that on the outside, didn't they? They gave up all their jobs and everything. They gave everything up on the outside. And he said, you know, I have come to serve. I am the king. I am going to restore God's kingdom. But they weren't really listening to what he said. They thought for him to be king. Let me give you some context. So at the time, the Jewish people were under the reign of the Roman Empire, right? And the Roman Empire were not good people, okay? If you think the Irish government is bad, you know nothing, okay? First of all, Jewish people and anybody who wasn't a Roman citizen was a second-class citizen. You had no rights in the law. You were left at the bottom. There were two tiers. Let's make it simple. We can go into more, but there were two tiers. There were Roman citizens, and they were very well looked after, and they were revered, and they were the top dogs. They were the top people in society, right? Everybody loved them, and they were a bit untouchable. There's many, many stories of them killing, robbing, thieving, taking land off people, doing loads of things, and they were untouchable because of their citizenship and because they had the power. And then you had everybody else, which included the Jewish people, who Jesus and the disciples were part of. And for them, they were worthless. They didn't have citizenship, they didn't have rights, they had to pay huge taxes. They had to follow laws they didn't even believe in. They knew that their money was going towards pagan temples, which for Jewish people would have killed them, right? It would have killed them, but they had no choice. They were powerless. So the Jewish people believed their Messiah was coming back to overthrow the Roman Empire and take charge and lift them up, and then they'd be the top dogs. Right. So when Jesus spoke about being the king and being powerful and restoring, this is what everybody heard. They heard, at last our time has come. We'll take over. We'll be the top dogs. And probably like myself. And then I won't have to pay that awful tax. But this is what they heard. So even the people who were walking, they heard his message, but they heard it through their cultural lens. So what's Jesus saying there? He said, what were you arguing about? And what were they arguing about? Who's going to be great? When he's top dog, I'm going to be second top dog. I'm going to be sitting beside him. I'm going to be reigning. Everybody's going to be like, oh, there's, let's just say me. Because I know yous don't think like this because yous are very humble, amazing followers of Jesus. But if it was me, I'd be like, yes, I'm going to be number two. I'm going to be up the top. Everybody's going to be like, oh, she knows Jesus. Yes, yeah, she does. And Jesus is saying, he's like, they're not getting it. They're not getting it. And what does he use to teach them the lesson? He takes the child and he sits the child in the middle of the room. Now, you may not understand, but in that culture as well, children were absolutely powerless. They were in control of nothing. Their main job was to do what they were told and bring honour to their family. So he takes the lowest of the low. The powerless one. No one ever said, how are you feeling? Like, I'm in this new phase of, like, you're learning. The way I was raised had its issues. So I'm trying to parent my boys. And you're like, how are you feeling? What are you doing? And sometimes I'm like, just put your socks on. I don't care how you feel about putting your socks on. But we're trying to be whole and healed, okay? But in our kids now have so much more rights than back then. You were basically nothing until you were an adult, and then your only role as a child was to bring honour to your family. So he takes the most powerless person in the room, a child, and sits them in the middle and says to them, he knew they were arguing about who was going to be greatest, and he said, anyone who wants to be first must be last and the servant of all. Which, you know, we all go, oh yeah, that's totally me, but let's live the reality. Does anybody ever say they want to screw up the skirting boards? I've been moving house this week, and by God, I hate skirting boards, and my back hurts because I'm on my knees cleaning. Right? No one ever goes, oh, I'd love that job. He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, which wouldn't really be done, because he's the top dog is taking the lowest dog and giving them a place and saying, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Basically, he's saying, if you want to honour God, the one who sent him, then honour the most powerless people in the room. So who's the powerless in our church, in our community, in our country? It costs us to do that, because we lay down our spotlight to give it to someone else, which doesn't really make sense. That's why it's called an upside down kingdom. The thing is, you think, grand, so they learned the lesson, then all the disciples went, oh, thank you, Master, I've really learned. I've learned my lesson. I now know that I need to honour the powerless. It's not about me. It's not about who's going to be greatest. And then they all go on their merry way and everything's grand. No, you're wrong. If we were on a game show, they were like, they got it wrong. They go again, right? I mean, this passage is in Matthew. And it's even more embarrassing for the lads, right? There's two people who follow Jesus. They're called the sons of Zebedee, right? And they go, they don't even ask Jesus. Guess what they do? They get their mom to ask Jesus, which is like scarlet for you, right? And she goes, so in Matthew goes, then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons by her, kneeling down in favour. So they sent their mom. What is it that you want, he says. She said, grant that one of these, my two sons of mine, may sit at your right and one at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup that I'm drinking? We can, they answered. Again, if it was a game show, it'd be like, they've no idea what he's on about. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those of whom they are being prepared by my Father. So it's a very similar story. Except rather than the lads getting it wrong, their mom's involved. And they go and ask him. So you have to understand, you know the picture of the Last Supper, you know that painting? The thing about that culture, there's so many things we don't know. It's just so different nowadays. If someone is the second in command, they sit beside you at the dinner. So imagine the dinner, you know the Last Supper, imagine, so Jesus in the centre. In that culture, if you are the second in command, you sit right next to them, if you're third. So if you're on the edge of the table, right, you're not really important. Like, you're allowed at the table, but you're not really important. So by her asking, can my son sit either side of you in the kingdom? She's saying, can they be the second in command, right? And, you know, Jesus could have said what I possibly say to my husband a lot of the time. What did I tell you? Did I not tell you this before? Have we not been through this? How many times do I have to tell you? I tell you to us already. It's about being a servant. It's not about being the greatest, right? Actual conversation with us again. Please Lord forgive me. He goes on, and this is what Jesus responds to them. He doesn't go, you have no idea, how many times do I have to tell you? He goes, when the 10 heard what the sons of Zebedee were saying, they were indignant or angry. Jesus calls them all and said, you know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. That would be the Roman Empire I was talking about. And their high offices exercise authority over them. They control everything. They're the bosses. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must become servants. Verse 27 says, and whoever wants to be first must become a slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom to many. The disciples weren't even annoyed because, oh my God, I can't believe you guys didn't know that. He told us a couple of weeks ago it's about being the greatest. They were angry because, how dare you think you're going to be first? I'm going to be first. I've got the top seat. Right? They had missed the point. He had explained it to them. He had told us. he had done sermons. He'd so many times said it, but they missed the point. And I may be mad, but I get such comfort in that, because I get it wrong all the time. But I look at these human people, and they lived and breathed and walked and lived with Jesus, and they got it wrong. So I hope I got it. And that's the end of the sermon. No, but there is always hope. But it's just stop and think about that. If the people who actually physically met Jesus, who saw the miracles with their own eyes, if they miss the point sometimes, then we need to say, do you know what, I'm probably going to get it wrong a few times. But to have the humility to know that about yourself, and also to pray and say, God, show me when I'm getting it wrong. And to know in Jesus' character, nowhere did he get angry with the disciples, like, you know, when he made mistakes like that. He turned it around and used it as a teaching opportunity. He didn't go, this is the last time I'm telling you. Instead, he goes, he takes the child and tries to teach them again. Or he reiterates what's going to happen. He says, lads, I told you, you need to lay down your life like I'm laying down my life. You need to serve. You need to put yourself to the back of the line. Which goes against everything that they wanted to do and everything we want to do. Like I said, no one starts off and says, I want to be a loser. I want to not be known. Even if you're quiet and you don't like being up front, that's even a control thing. It's about you want to control where you are. It doesn't really matter where God wants you to be. It's about what you want to do. And there was this theologian. He's actually a Bible teacher, and he wrote a really amazing book about pride and humility and how we're at war inside us if we're Christians. Because everything in us wants to say, even as Christians, sometimes we say, like, we know the truth. We know it. You don't. You look, you sinful world out there, we know. That's pride, because Jesus never said anything like that. He said, I came for the entire world. And the only way through God is through Jesus. He never set himself apart to be like, look at you, you don't know anything. Everything he did was in humility. Everything was in love. He was not interested in, no, he didn't go like, I know all this, you don't know any of that. There was no pride in him. So that book is about the two warring sides of us in ourselves, wanting to be great and then laying down. And he has this quote that I'm going to read. His name is J. Lanier Burns. It goes, conscientious Christians are in a daily battle with easily besetting temptations, misplaced priorities, alluring compromises and broken relationships in a world that weakens them with its complexities, so many options, all the stresses and all the seductive values of this world. The battle lines are drawn. Humility is submissive dependence on the Lord, who is Jesus, in his terms, while pride is rebellion against God's covenantal guidelines. So that's a really posh and academic way of saying humility is choosing God's way above the way we want to do it. It's laying it down. And I think, for me anyway, right, so when I became a Christian, I was absolutely broken. And I knew I needed God. I'd made so many mistakes. I was miserable in myself, and I was broken inside. And in his faithfulness, don't get me wrong, my life is not perfect, okay? I've been moving house the last 2 weeks. I have not been the epitome of godly character. I've been tired, stressed, wife and mammy and friend. And I probably wouldn't want you to see on a movie screen some of the stuff that came out of my life, right? But I apologise, and we start again. But I have a life that I never imagined that I could have. I have peace in my head. That I was absolutely all over the place. I was not comfortable in my own skin. I couldn't be with myself. And anything I have is because of God, because he gave me the peace that transcends all understanding. That he brought a calm into me, and he told me that I was worth something, and that he would die for me. And I'm so grateful that I have this life, that I'm here because of what he did. But sometimes I forget. And inadvertently, I start thinking that maybe some of this is what I did. Some of this is down to my ability, my intellect, my hard work. And I forget that anything I have is through Christ. All the amazing things that he has gifted me with, a life that is full of joy, that I can laugh again, that I have order where there was chaos, that I have peace where there was unsettled spirits, is down to him. And I need to go back and I start thinking, oh, maybe I'll do it my way. Like, I know he said that, but like, I think it's, you know, and sometimes even as Christians, let's be honest, we use spiritual language to say it, you know what I mean? You say, I just feel the Lord, you know, I just feel the Lord. And well, no one knows what God's speaking to except you, right? Now, the only thing I'd say with that is it can't ever contradict what the Bible says. You can have an awful lot of feelings about what God is saying, but if God is telling you to leave your husband to go be with another man, that's crazy, but that's against the Bible, okay? If God is telling you it's okay for me to just take this money, like, that's really clear. He's not going to tell you that. But even with that, there's still a lot of things that aren't huge moral things that you're going to go against. But in your heart of hearts, you know God's asking you to lay something down, but you don't want to. That could just be me. You could all be super holy people who are grand. So both the stories we looked at involved Jesus. They involved his close followers. They involved Jesus trying to teach the disciples that they were not getting to the point of why he came to earth and why we are here. Okay? They were both important to show us that we missed the point. Three things about Jesus tells us, if you read his Gospels, that are really important. Jesus came to serve, not to serve, not to be served. That Jesus came to protect the lowly and the helpless. That they didn't have to help themselves. We have all these things whizzing about in the world, about loads of different views of the world and social justice and stuff like that. And sometimes it could be like, well, you know, people just have to help themselves. They're going to keep on making mistakes. But Jesus didn't say that. We can always take the moral high ground, but he said we have to serve. We don't serve with strings attached. We don't help people with strings attached. We don't lay down our lives with strings attached to God, because he'll start picking up those strings and reminding you that you haven't laid that down to him. Jesus came to help the powerless, not the powerful. And as you exist in this world as a follower of Christ, you can be given a lot of opportunities and things can rise up. And you can be, like, God can call you to great things, okay? But it's a heart of the matter. It's not always like the outward actions, it's your heart. Like, you can be the most famous politician, sports person, teacher, educator, whatever in the world. But you could be prideful, you could be humble in your heart. So it's about not missing the point. And the point is that we need to have a love for Christ before anything else. And we're going to have some communion. And I'm going to ask you to just sit with that for a minute. Because anything else, if you don't have Christ, everything else I said this morning is pointless, okay? It starts and ends with Christ. The point of the matter is Christ. It's not about who's great. It's not about humility. It's not about failure. It's not about all those things. It's not about reading the Bible. It's not about praying for hours. It's about a love for Christ, and that's what it starts with. And as the journey continues, we get distracted from this love. Everything in this world is distracting you from having him as your first love. I'm not saying it's easy. We've been searching for houses. We have one now. We're going to need to get another one again. I'm fed up moving. I'm overwhelmed. Do we have enough money for bills? Are the kids okay? Is my family okay? Are my sisters going to be okay? Like, my head is non-stop all the time. So you're not talking to someone who has everything together. So I need to quieten my spirit and remind myself not to miss the point. That it's not about success, it's not about having all my needs met, it's not about being financially secure, it's not about all that stuff, all important, but it's about having a love for Christ and putting Him first. Even if we're Christians, we can develop little hobby horses that are all godly. Like, so you could be passionate about social justice, you could be passionate about Israel, you could be passionate about end times, you can be passionate about different things. But somehow along the way, your passion becomes more important than Christ. You never chose that, but it's where you end up. So we're going to take some time this morning, and I'm going to give out the emblems, and we're going to put some music on, and we're going to come back. I'm going to give you a few minutes. No one else knows your heart. Now, eventually your heart will come out, as in with the disciples. They would have kept it all together in front of Jesus, but eventually it shows that, you know, they were missing the point and they wanted to be the greatest and not the wonderful servant that God asked them to be. But I'm going to ask you about this. Is Christ first in your life? And if you're confident in that, which you can be, that's okay. And I want you to ask God to reveal to you the areas in your life that you've missed the point, where pride has stumbled in. Because we can't be followers of Christ. Thanks, Brian. God's not going to be able to use us, and we're not going to be able to grow if pride is there. And we have strings attached to our relationship with God.